Welcome back. I'm Richard Dolan. Again, I want to thank you for being here with me. This is a tough segment for me to get into, but I really want to talk to you about this. I have had a lifetime of reading philosophy, ethics. I've said many times, one of my favorite writers for my entire life has been Marcus Aurelius, the Roman emperor, Stoic philosopher, who's always focused on understanding truth and living a life of integrity. And I read Wayne Dyer when I was 15 years old and was deeply influenced by him and studied a great deal of Zen philosophy and so forth. And these are all very important to me. It's been important to me for my entire life to try to lead my life in a certain way that I could be proud of, that could lead others in a positive direction, and basically make the world a better place, not a worse place. I've always been consciously aware of that as an explicit goal. And, you know, for most of my life, I thought, oh, yes, well, that's what I'm doing. And yet there was always something that didn't feel quite right. At times I was aware of this, and then it would recede just below the surface. Now, I mean, everyone has their issues, and this is something I've learned. But the issue in me, and the one that has, for most of my life, created a serious problem, is something I've never discussed on this show, and it's been my relationship with women. And I want to talk a little bit about this. It really came out in my life during the period around my divorce, which was finalized about 5 or 6 years ago, and I was suddenly single again. And for me, I know for a lot of guys, it would translate into having relationships with several women, which did happen. And on one level, again, you might expect that since that's what happens when you're single. But I see what was really going on without me really even thinking about it too deeply at the time, was that I would always get a little rush, a little thrill when a pretty woman, an intelligent woman, would find me interesting or attractive. It was a lot like a drug. I liked it. And I really wouldn't admit to myself just how much I liked it. Now, at the same time, there was much deeper stuff going on, what I now am calling programming, or even reactive programming. And this reactive programming is even more fundamental. And it's about what I have to say is the objectification of women in general. Now, I have a wonderful, beautiful fiance now named Tracy. She would often gently bring these behaviors to my attention. So we would be out at a restaurant or shopping or anywhere. I mean, here I am with the most amazing and wonderful woman in the world to me. And still, when some other pretty face would get into my line of vision, I would look and look and then look again, and often without really even thinking about it, and sometimes without even thinking that I was doing it. And she would sometimes point this out, and you know how it is. You know, someone points something out to you that you're doing and you deny it. You get defensive. I got very defensive about this. I'd say, oh, come on. I didn't mean anything by it. Or, this is what men do, or what's wrong with admiring someone? I'm not talking to them, or whatever other excuse I would come up with, I would throw out at her and try to deflect and essentially negate what she was observing in me, which she, of course, was accurately observing. Now, I know that there's men out there listening at this very moment thinking, well, what's the big deal? Okay, well, let me try to explain to you what the big deal is. Right. So first of all, if you are a man and you are out with a woman, I can tell you that nothing would make her feel better than for her to think that she is the only thing that matters to you, which is how it's supposed to be. I mean, when it's not like that, that's a sign that something isn't quite right. Right. Something's off. Well, all right, look, I had an entire lifetime of engaging in this type of behavior. I did it through my first marriage, which I had a very wonderful wife for many years, and I did it. Look around. And I think this behavior was heightened, I would say, by by my period of being out there on the market, so to speak. So bad habits for sure. And I wouldn't look at these habits. So every time a man does this kind of behavior, he's cutting his woman down bit by bit, little by little. It's like a little pocket knife that just slices at her heart. A little cut this time, a little cut that time, and so on. And, you know, women have their own ways of trying to cope with this type of behavior. Sometimes they just cave and they just accept it. And that results in what you might call codependent behavior. And that's common, by the way. It's also not healthy. It's a kind of sacrificing of your own sovereignty, a kind of surrender of yourself, and or at least a surrender of your ability to trust your judgment. So when you see something happening, you stop making that assessment, and you learn not to trust your own judgment. Sometimes women will just rationalize it away, and they say they don't care, and maybe they convince themselves at some level that they don't, but I don't believe it. There's always a wounded heart deep inside, sometimes buried really deep. And maybe it's buried so deep that for their entire life, they don't even know it's there, but it is there. Well, anyway, in my life, things came to a head not too long ago. Tracy was so patient with me for so long, and one day after talking for a long, long, long time about this, and after a lot of intense denial on my part, and I mean, intense denial on my part, I finally started looking into this. What I now see so clearly has been a deep character flaw in me. But I want to get to something even deeper than this, because it's more than just, oh yeah, I like to look at different women. I mean, that's bad enough, but the real issue is I learned something from the philosopher Eckhart Tolle, which was something of a breakthrough in understanding, at least for me, and it's the idea that you are not your mind. You're not your mind. And at this point, you're thinking, well, wait a minute, how can that be? I mean, how can I not be my mind? How can I not be the things that I'm thinking? Those are my thoughts. I am the author of my thoughts. But the question is really, are you? So his idea is that what most of us think of as our mind is actually not really us. So most of what we think of as us, he says, is actually it's reactive programming, as it were, from events at various points in our lives. So think of it this way. We all have powerful needs. And when those needs are not met in one form or another, we'll develop coping skills. And all we want to do is feel better. All we want to do is avoid pain. So if we develop insecurities as young children in one form or another, it's very easy to develop a mental habit for all kinds of coping skills. I remember over 2 decades ago when my son was about a year and a half, and I was chatting with another young father. And he had a daughter about the same age as my son, and he just mentioned inadvertently that his daughter did not like to be held. I was like, wait, what? How's that possible? I mean, what 18-month-old child does not like to be held? But it turned out, and this poor girl, that this little baby girl had, I think, 5 or 6 care providers in a row in her first year and a half of life. So she was born, mom goes back to work, pardon me, after a couple of weeks, I think, and they cycled through care providers. So, you know, when you're an infant, of course, what you need to do more than anything else is bond. You have to bond, and hopefully with your mother, your parents, but really your mother. Mom went away, so the infant in her own way mourned, I'm sure. Here comes another care provider. Okay, so she reaches out to that one. That care provider's gone after a couple of months. She mourns again. Here comes another one, and then another, and then another. And eventually this little girl learns at the age of 18 months, She's not trusting anyone. What is her coping skill? She withdraws into herself. And who knows what this young woman is like today? I have to think she's got issues. And she may not even be aware of the way that her mind is working now, because what she's developed and what all of us develop are different subroutines, subpersonalities that actually get into our minds. They invade our heads. And we think that they're us, but they're not us. All that they are your reactions to events in your life at a certain time in your history. And they had not gone away. Some of those subpersonalities or subroutines will leave after a little while, and some won't. And some can be compulsive or addictive even. In my case, like every boy that I knew back then, I learned several very wrong things about girls and women. One of the first things that I learned was A, that sex was somehow a forbidden activity. B, that it had something to do with the bodies of girls. C, that some body parts were more interesting than other body parts, especially the parts you weren't allowed to see. So this great mystery was developed. I remember, it's kind of a funny story in a way. I was 7 years old. I was at my cousin's house, my aunt and uncle's house. And I had a cousin who was a year older than me. And we were in the kitchen of his house, and all the adults had gone into, I guess, the living room. But in the kitchen, on the table, this little kitchen table, was a Scrabble board. They were playing Scrabble earlier. All the pieces were out on the board. And my cousin, I'll never forget this, he spelled out the words, "lady's tit," on the Scrabble board. We looked around as if, like, making sure no one would see us. And then he scrambled up the board so no one could read the words, and we laughed because we thought it was funny. It's kind of a funny memory, but it's also a very instructive moment when I started to think about this. And what did it actually mean? So it invested a part of a woman's anatomy, her breast, with some kind of special meaning, which, after all, like, really, why would it have special meaning? It's a breast, right? But to a little 7 or 8 year old kid, wow, this is an incredible thing. And it also made it reinforced with me, and I'm sure with him, the idea that this was somehow dirty or naughty or forbidden. And whatever you think about it, that is not healthy. As I got older, I mean, there's example after example of all the encounters that I had with essentially a sexualized culture. And a pornographic culture. So let me talk about that. I remember being 12 years old, going into a grocery store, and behind the guy at the grocery store were all the porno magazines, the Playboys and the Penthouse. And let me tell you something. When you're a 12-year-old boy, that's like, whoo, that's powerful stuff for a boy going through puberty. The fact that they were at a higher level, inaccessible, beautiful, marketed just perfectly, of course, to entice your desire, further hammered home this idea of sex as this kind of mystical, magical event, somehow with the body of a beautiful woman. This is how women become objectified. It's exactly how it happens. Because I can tell you, when you're an adolescent boy or girl, you are so vulnerable to this kind of messaging, because all you're trying to do is figure out your life, and all you know is, like, you got all these crazy hormones going out throughout your body, and then boom, here's this image imprinting itself on your psyche. Don't underestimate the power of that. What added to me personally is that all through my high school years, I couldn't get a girlfriend. No one was interested in me, that's for sure. And like a lot of guys, you know, most guys don't get much in the way of girlfriends, and I certainly did not. And I developed this, this longing, right, for a wonderful, perfect, beautiful girlfriend. And I really believe looking at my life now over the last, you know, number of years, particularly in my single years, especially when I was in a different situation and I saw like my high school mind kicking in, thinking, ah, I can finally seek out that which I've wanted all this time. And here's the problem with that, aside from the fact that it can leave a trail of broken emotions and even shattered dreams, because it can do that. But on top of that, what I've come to understand is that engaging in this type of behavior, when you're searching over and over again for the same thing, that doesn't satisfy you. And the reason, of course, is because it can't. If you're searching for sex, as I did, in wanting, this perfect situation, well, it's not about sex. It's always about the intimacy that goes with it. You're never going to be satisfied by something that you're searching for over and over and over again, because it can't satisfy you. You need something deeper than that. But all of this that I've discussed with you so far is not really the core of what I wanted to get at, and I want to get at the core now. So I resisted understanding this for the longest time, and Tracy was so patiently trying to get me to understand. And it occurred to me why I wouldn't get it. And I wouldn't get it because I have an intense fear of failure. And this came to me as a shock when it hit me as a revelation. But it's true. And what's true about it is, what's crazy about it is that I had always thought of myself as someone who has less of a fear of failure than the average person. I was always willing to take chances, whether it's leaving academia, writing an interesting book, or having certain ideas that other people wouldn't be able to wouldn't formulate and so on. And I thought, well, I want to be brave. But here's where I wasn't brave. I wasn't ultimately brave enough to face the fact that I had failed at a core value in my life. You know, when you're in a store, or I'm in a store, and I would ogle, or at least look a little too long at a woman. Why? How many times a day does she have to put up with that stuff? And now me. And I realize I'm not one of the good guys. I became, in this instance, one of the bad guys. I'd become something that I didn't want to be. And that is the fear of failure I'm talking about. Because the most intense fear of failure isn't failing at a business venture or failing at a game. It's failing to yourself, to the ideals that you set out for yourself of the kind of person that you believed you want to be. And for me, I can tell you absolutely the worst thing in the world for me was to recognize that I had fallen short, woefully short of ideals and attitudes that I had professed to have. And it was so difficult for me to come to the understanding of, in many ways, the kind of guy that I'd become. It was the kind of man that I wasn't proud to be. So I'll tell you, for the last week, I have been holed up and really thinking long and hard about myself and about my life and about the kind of man that I want to be for the rest of the life that I have available to me, however many years that is. I'm 55 now. It's funny how life goes, because I can remember being 20 like it was yesterday, but it was 35 years ago. So here's the thing. Life comes and it goes fast. You think you got a lot of time, but you don't. Don't kid yourself. We all are on the road to checking out sooner than we think. So I've asked myself, like, what is it that is important to me that I want to do for the remainder of whatever good years that I have? And I'm going to tell you right now, the single most important thing for me is to make sure that the woman I love knows that I am devoted to her and that she's what it's all about for me. And I'll never again make the mistake of having her doubt that. That's rule number one. Number two, really equal to that, is maintaining a standard of maturity and integrity and manhood that is consistent with my highest ideals. Because what I don't ever want to face again is the ridiculous incongruity of a guy who talks again and again and again about the need for government openness and truth and the end of secrecy, who has created instead such a blind spot in his own world where he cannot be honest with himself. I don't want that ever to happen again. So this is me now, as opposed to me earlier. And for those of you out there who know me personally and you see me in person, I want you to see a new person, a new Richard Dolan, when you meet me again. And I think that you will. So it was important for me to say what I wanted to say to you publicly for a lot of reasons. One is it helps me further integrate the ideas that I'm rolling around constantly in my head these days. It's helpful for me, so it's my little bit of therapy, so thank you very much for listening, doctor. But it also is my public statement to you and a promise that whatever else my personal failings will be, and I'm sure I have many other failings as a person, but what I don't want one failing at least to be is that I lack integrity and that I lack the consistency between the ideals that I talk about and the actions that I follow through. I want, because in the end, what else is it that we have? Reputation that comes and goes, life that comes and goes. While we have our life, let's at least do what we can to understand who we are, to shine a light on the little sub-personalities that we have within us, and understand that we are not our mind. We are not all those little voices. There is an authentic part of us. It's inside each of us. But it gets buried. It gets drowned out by all of these other little voices. So for me, what I want is to identify each one of those little voices that doesn't belong, or that may have arisen at the time due to very logical reasons as a reaction to my environment at the time, but are no longer necessary and have outlived their purpose. That's my goal. And to be honest with you, I don't have time for anything else. I'm not wasting my time anymore lying to myself. I'm not wasting my time anymore deceiving myself or those I love on what I'm about. So in this case, it's about, you know, my long history of objectifying women. I look back on it like, how can I do that? But that's the thing, you know, when you come to a realization about yourself, it's easy to look back and think, how the hell was I such an ass, honestly? But when you're going through it, you want to tell yourself nice things about yourself all the time, which I wanted to do. I wanted to tell myself that, you know, I wasn't the bad guy. I wanted to tell myself that I wasn't sleazy or anything else like that. Because who wants to believe that about themselves? Well, that's the kind of attitude you take it several steps further, and that's how you get criminals and killers and murderers, because they also are really good, most of them, at justifying all kinds of things that they do as well. You know, they take it to a really great level, because no one wants to have to look at themselves in the mirror and say, you are a true failure at everything that matters in this world. That's the worst. And that fear, and I'm suggesting that, you know, you listening, There's got to be, deep inside you, a little voice that's telling you that maybe there's something you're doing that's not quite what you want it to be. But I don't want to make this about you. I was making this about me. And honestly, I'm at such a different point in my life right now, such a different state of mind right now. I can't even describe it to you. It's like this, it's like a revelation. I mean, women listening are like, wow, you know, whoop-de-doo. You finally get the message. You finally get the memo. Yes, I know. But understand the way that our minds work. It's very difficult often to get to that core part of your life where these patterns begin and we take them for granted. If there's one thing that we can take away, it's that I think that there are all of these hidden little subroutines running through each of us. And it's a good thing to ask. It's a good question to ask. How much of it is authentically you? And how much of it has just invaded you and is like the guest that wouldn't leave? You are not your mind. So says Eckhart Tolle, and it's words worth remembering. Well, with that, I guess it's time to say goodnight. I've taken you to the top of the hour. I want to thank my producer, Race Hobbs. I want to thank the good people in the chat room. And I want to thank you, especially on the other end of the connection, for listening. I am Richard Dolan. Looking forward to the next time with you. Now, stay tuned for 3 hours of Fade to Black featuring Jimmy Church. And do remember, while we learn and grow and search for the truth in everything that we do, let's be kind to each other. Good night.